I'm going to give you the secret sauce for the sermon process, okay? But it can't leave the room. Is that fair? Okay. Now, I don't know how your minister does it, but I'm a traveling minister. I see many of you that I saw last year. And so in order for this to come together, we have to do a lot of emails, a lot of phone calls, and we're picking songs, we're picking readings, we're picking if we need a soloist or a choir, a lot of different pieces that go into it. And it's electronic, or we call each other, you know, someone might send me YouTube, listen to this song or listen to that song. I get tired, so I do this very often, and about 3 months out is the time that I normally start getting correspondence from each church. And because I get tired, I have an idea of what I want to do. I have a theme. I might ask the church, well, what does your congregation need? Or I might have gone to your church before. I say, I know what they need. I know what I'm going to preach about. But I just have the bones. I have an outline. And then I fill it out as I go. Might be like the Friday night before. Wine helps. But I, you know, during the time, I've realized that the three-month period for me is what makes me feel most authentic when I actually get up here. Because during that time, it doesn't give me, you know, 6 months to read the Bible and do exegesis. That's the type of stuff I have to do in seminary where you're looking at historical texts and just, it's kind of boring. This way, I have 3 months to just pick up on stuff. So you know how if you're like cousins with a comedian, they might like tell stories about you? Being married to a minister, being cousins with a minister is even worse. Because everything, you just become super inspirational to them all of a sudden. Like, you know they're about to preach because they're like, yeah, tell me more about that. You're like, oh, no, you're going to use that on Sunday. And you're like, yeah, I'm about to use that. So the 3 months gives me this period of time to jot things down that make sense to me. Now, are you all familiar that with like in psychology and everything, like if you're shopping for a new car, you're all of a sudden, you want a Camry, you see a Camry everywhere? Or if someone says like, think about butterflies, they do this sometimes at work, like the week before they have a specialist come in and, you know, talk to you all about your values. The therapist will say, think about butterflies all week before we do the team building. And then you get there and you say, did you think about butterflies all week? You're like, oh, I'm so glad we paid this person because this is amazing. But it's fun, but it's really how our brains work, that we're going to put our hearts on something, and therefore we're going to pay more attention to it. Actually, in Hebrew, when I learned Hebrew in seminary, and my teacher used to say, "Sin lev tamidin," which means pay attention, students, and "sin lev" means pay attention, but that means place your heart on something. The literal translation is to place your heart on something, is to pay attention. So things are going to pop out, right? So the other piece is you have the thing that you might want to talk about, but I really have started to believe that you get tested on what you're trying to preach about when you're a minister. Now, do any of you know Tara Brach? Yeah, okay, I love Tara Brach. She's not Unitarian, but we're just going to claim her, okay? So she actually is, she's Buddhist, and she does mindfulness meditation. She did Radical Acceptance, that book. And she speaks at River Road, she speaks at River Road Unitarian Church. And she used to be a psychologist, so she brings together how mindfulness and how your brain works. And she swears anytime she's going to preach about something, if she's going to preach about patience, her patience gets tested the day before. Okay? So I had two stories, okay? I had the one and then the one. So you guys can tell me which one you like more. Now, the original story is lighthearted, kind of. So The original story, it sounds ridiculous now, but I was going to talk about stepping in some milk with fresh socks. Like, does anyone else feel as strongly as I do? I feel like it's like a political stance. Like, I stepped in milk with wet, you know, with fresh socks on, and now, like, I'm enraged as a citizen. So I wanted to talk about this, and, you know, I had all these metaphors, but the thing is it wasn't my milk, okay? So that's important to understand. I have a toddler, and he is 2. Yeah, I know. Thank you. And he, you know, he's learning to pour on his own. I'm not, like, instructing him to pour. He's finding things to pour. And he can get in the refrigerator and he's opening things because I don't tighten things really well. And he's, you know, self-service. He's just getting, finding cups. I don't know why these things are not put up, but he finds a cup or finds a receptacle. We have like a lot of Halloween pumpkins, like jack-o'-lanterns, plastic laying around. So if he can drink out of it, he's going to go for it. And he spilled my expensive oat milk on the floor right by my equally expensive seminary books. And I was like, dude, mama needs a 5-minute break. So I need both of us to go over here because I felt myself getting annoyed. And so I moved said child over here, okay? And I forgot the milk was there and I stepped in it. Okay, yeah. So we'll go back to that, okay? So the bulletin board, that was the first story. Now, the title of my sermon is No One to Hold Him and No One to Fold Him. Now, I got that from my Aunt Pat because she's a very wise woman, and she is almost like 80. So she was my grandmother's sister, so she's my great aunt. And she would always say these things, and I thought she was like making all of this stuff up. So she's like, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. And I'm going to tell you, like, when this comes up. So this comes up, we're, like, at IHOP, and I'm sitting at the table, and I see a chicken, and I'm like, oh, quack, 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 and I'm, like, making noise. She's like, no one to hold them, no one to fold them. I'm like, okay. So it was like the mom, like, you better be quiet up in this IHOP type of thing, okay? And I don't want to be, like, ageist that, like, all older people play cards. But, like, she taught everyone in my family, like, as soon as I had good neck control, so about, like, 4 months old, I'm learning how to play, you know, different solitaire and learning how to play little poker. She wasn't calling it that. It was just, like, advanced old maid, and I'm just like, okay. So we didn't, like, actually gamble, but I was learning how to play poker with her. And I swear, I was, like, maybe, like, 28, which is how old I am right now, when I realized that came from Kenny Rogers. And not my Aunt Pat. Okay, so just bear with me. I'm adulting, trying to adult well. So, you know, that's obviously from the gambling song. And it has meaning other than don't make noise in IHOP. There's strategy. So I'm going to read you some lyrics from the song because I had to look this up because, like, I just learned this. So he said, son, I've made a life out of reading people's faces, knowing what the cards were by the way they held their eyes. So if you don't mind me saying, I can see you're out of aces. For a taste of your whiskey, I'll give you some advice. Okay, so what was the advice? No one to hold him, no one to fold him, no one to walk away. Never count your money while you're sitting at the table, right? And he says, if you're going to play the game, boy, you got to learn to play it right. And he also says, every hand is a winner and every hand is a loser. So you got to know what to do with the hand. Okay, cool. She also had another saying that someone lies quicker than a cat can lick its butt. Have you ever heard that? She used another word for butt, and I'm like, what is that? We didn't even have a cat. But apparently, you know, cats can, like, maneuver quickly to, like, groom themselves. So I don't want our minds to go over there too far. But she used to say this to people, to their face, when they were, like, BSing her. She's like, you're lying quicker than a cat can lick his butt. I'm like, you cannot say that to the IHOP waitress. You just told me to hold and fold. Like, come on. And she told you can't get the senior discount. Like, just go with it. She didn't care. She's so embarrassing. And she literally just, she would tell you. And that was her folding them. You know, that was her saying, I'm not going to hold this to him. I'm going to let you know, like, I see what you got. And it's not right. And so I think we can take a little bit from, you know, from that lesson. Either way, either hold no one to hold them, no one to fold them means be quiet, or it means play your cards right, right? Okay, so back to story one. Toddler spilt the milk, right? So I go from annoyed to, like, enraged because now my sock is wet. Remember, this is a deep political stance for me. No more wet socks, 2021. So I'm like, when you get really just agitated and it starts going up through your body, like, I had to, like, make it go back down. This is how I found Terror Box, so I can make it go back down. But it was coming up, and I was like, Tyler, go, let's move away. And so I didn't yell because, like, how terrible would I have felt yelling about a sock? I mean, they were fresh socks. They were clean. And I had just bought them. I'm going to stop thinking about this because it gets even worse when I start thinking about it. But I just bought those socks. I know what socks they are, too. Those white socks. Anyway, so I go from annoyed to enraged. So I move away from it. But the enraged part was when I came back and stepped on it because it just felt like icky. Like, that was the word that I was thinking of when I was trying to figure out what I was going to talk about today. And I was like, I should, like, find a thesaurus because I've been to seminary and, like, I have a master's degree, so I should find another word. But, like, literally just feels icky. It just feels gross. And I really didn't know how to feel because I was upset with myself. I could have cleaned the milk up, and I left it there. Okay, so since I left the milk there, now I'm feeling like kind of dumb that that I've let myself get to this point that I'm, you know, that I'm finding myself with, you know, with wet socks where I and finding myself angry. I think that was the other piece that I found myself angry and I didn't like that. And thinking about today, I originally was thinking about, like, I feel like that's the way that I think about when we're on the sideline and we kind of like see a microaggression, because I knew that we were talking about resistance this month. I knew we were talking about Dr. King this month. I knew we were talking about different things that bother us about the world and about the way we interact. And I'm Black, so, you know, I think about race a lot. And it's hard when you're standing there or you see injustice. Like, you don't know if it's completely fair or not. Like, you can't put your finger on it. And you say, that just does not seem right. And you, like, chalk it up to spilled milk, you know? Okay, right, so it wasn't bad. Yeah, that was the first story. Yeah, it was not terrible. The essence is there of the metaphor. But, you know, I feel like as Unitarians, if we think about this milk, like, we commit to cleaning it up, don't we? Like, we say, you know, I'm gonna try to understand that. I'm going to try to see if that was really what I thought. I'm going to put effort into understanding what could have gone down in that, you know, I might ask a person of color, I might look it up online and see, was that really unfairness I saw? But I think we have to, like, take the time to just feel icky about that and say, I don't like how that made me feel. And I feel like we don't do that enough. This is a random aside, but yesterday my husband said that, so I'm skipping ahead in the story, but I have a stepdaughter. I got married, guys, like four weeks ago. Hooray! Yes, I'm skipping ahead in the story a little bit, but I think this is important because this is like a good conversation I had with my husband. But his daughter was she didn't know I was still in the house, and she kept saying, "Is Miss Chris gone? Is Miss Chris gone?" And he's like, "Oh, honey, she's not gone yet." And then he said to me, "She's so sad." And I said, "I know. I wish there was a way." And I started trying to talk about a solution. And he said, "And it's okay. And I think we should make sure our kids know that." And I stopped and I, like, put the dish down and I turned to him and I was like, "So what you're saying is that when we shouldn't rush to give them a solution, we should just let them sit in that." And he was like, "Yeah, because then they don't know that it's okay to feel what they felt." I was like, "You a good one. You smart," because that was on point. So anyway, back to my sermon. We have to take that time to just feel icky. And so we want to help and we don't know how sometimes. So we have to fold them in this case. You have to say, "Okay, I have this belief about what I just heard, maybe that, I don't know, people pull the race card too much. That's a belief. Okay. I have this feeling about what I just saw that, like, it made me uncomfortable, or I'm seeing unfairness and that seemed oppressive. That seemed like that person was treating an older person bad, and I just don't like how it made me feel." You have to lay all those things out and say, "This is how I felt. This is what belief I'm bringing. And then what do you want to do about it? Like, this is the outcome that I want." And then maybe you touch base with your resources, the people that you talk to about things like this, the sites that you go to, the activists or the influencers that you like, and say, "Does anyone else have these beliefs, these feelings, and these outcomes?" And see if you can come up with something, right? So you also have to know when to hold them. You can also wait until you know that it's oppressive, because a lot of us go through this with, like, our family members or, like, people that we're close to, that they say things that are just kind of, like, a little oppressive. Not that you can have levels, but you, like, don't know if they really meant it like that. Like, holidays are famous for this, where you're just kind of like, "What?" So I'm going to give you a tip of how to navigate those ambiguous moments. But first, I'm going to jump ahead to the second story. Okay? So first story wasn't terrible, right? No, not terrible. No. But it's not the one. This is the one. So me and my husband have been looking for a place to live for like a year. And we finally started actively looking for a place to rent like 2 weeks ago. I mean, not 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, because we tried to get pre-approved. Y'all about to hear way too much of my business. We tried to get pre-approved for a house. I work for myself. If you've ever gone through this, they're like, we don't trust you. So we need 2 years of income, okay? So I'll be doing this, the Lumbercina thing. By the way, you pronounce that really well, Lumbercina. We don't know how to say it either, but it's Latin in some. That was beautiful. Yeah, thank you. So everyone on the team says it a little different, but yeah. I've been doing that for almost 2 years in April. So we said, you know what, let's just go rent a place. We're looking out of nowhere. I get a call that we got approved for this place. I mean, I get an email that we got approved for this place. And I'm a substitute teacher also, so I don't work every week. So I happen to be working this week. And I text my husband. I was like, hey, at lunch, we need $4,000 by 3 p.m. First, last security, send. Boom. And he calls me. He's like, what? I was like, no, it's cool. We got approved for this place. And he's like, are you serious? And I said, yes, we got approved for this place. We need the move-in call so we can get the keys today. And that's what we did. So we, you know, got some personal checks, drove to this house, moved in. That was last week, so I'm really sleepy. That was 8 days ago. So I moved in the first night. I'm sleeping on the floor. I bring the toddler with me. The toddler's 2. Don't forget that. And I stay in the house, and my husband comes finally Friday. Friday, I also had this really posh bed coming from my stepdaughter. Like, she's 12, so she's about to be 13. I'm like, you need a big, like, swanky bed. So I got one of those day beds, and it's, like, upholstered, and it's, like, silver. It's the bomb. But it didn't come until Friday. So we had to get the bed, put the bed together. So we were up until like 4:30 in the morning on Friday night. She sleep at the dining room table. We drag her upstairs and we're like, ta-da, look at your room at 4 a.m. And she's like, I want to go to bed. So she sleeps in the bed. Fast forward to Saturday now. So this is the first night that all of us are together. I want to get everything done before I leave. So I got dinner ready. I got laundry done. Toddler's packed in the car. I pull off. It's 10 o'clock at night. This is Saturday. Yesterday. Yeah. 10 o'clock last night. I get in the car. And I pull around my block, and my car is just like, what the heck? I push on the gas, and it's like, doo, 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 doo. I said, if I have a flat tire. And see, I'm agnostic, but I was like, Lord, please be with me. And I got out in my driver's seat, and I had a flat tire in the back. So I circle around the block, and I came back, and there's an alley. You know how, like, some D.C. homes have, like, parking in the back of the house? So Philly is, there's, like, no, like, apartment building. So every house kind of has, like, some space in the back. So my car was back there for the day, between the picking up the bed. We had a U-Haul and stuff. So it was back there for however long. And I pull up in the driveway. My husband comes out the back, and he's standing over here. And I'm sitting here, and I pull up and I said, man, this is crazy. And I'm looking at him and he's not coming around to my driver's side. And I'm a kept woman, okay? So I want you to come open my door when I pull up home. So I'm just kidding, but for real, he opens my door because it's very nice to do so. And I down with the patriarchy. You don't have to do that, okay? If there's young women in here, excuse me. So he doesn't come around, and we literally had this moment where we're like, you know, like Scooby-Doo, and he's like, if you're here and I'm there, uh-oh. And we get out, I get out the car, and he runs, and I run at the same time to the opposite side of the car. I had 2 flat tires. Both of my, this is 10:15 now, last night. I'm in Philly. I have 2 flat tires. So I'm upset, but I'm not surprised, and I'm going to tell you why, because this is like the 3rd or 4th flat tire. It's not like the 5th flat tire I've had on this car since I purchased it in March. So remember I said I'm 28 and I'm just adulting? It's an older car because I wanted to have a low car note, but I wanted a bigger car. I had a 2011 Camry. I got a 2004 Highlander. It's a big mom truck. I didn't put new tires on it, okay? So this is an old car that I took the tire, I took it right off the lot. And so the tires were done. They keep, you know, everything that touches it, they're like popping. So I keep finding nails or whatever. So I wasn't surprised this happened because about a month earlier, I had a flat tire. And I came out when we were going to look at another place. Going to look at this house, I have a flat tire. And I say, you know what, let's just change it. And I looked at my husband. I said, do you know how to change a tire? I'm asking you this before we get married. He's like, we're getting married in 2 weeks. Let's do it. He does not know how to change a tire. He said he did. And I'm like, what are you, everything he did, I was like, what are you doing? The jack goes like this. And he's just like, I got this. And I'm like, guys, I know how to change a tire. So we put my donut on. I take the tire, throw it in the trunk. We go see the house. We didn't like that house. But anyway, take the tire to a tire shop the next day. So that was on Wednesday. I take it on a Thursday. Were any of you here when the sanctuaries would come? The organization that does the arts and justice. I see some nods, some of the sanctuaries in D.C. I was like a founding member of the sanctuaries, and they unfortunately closed about a month ago, and they paid for me to come down so I could be honored. So I'm trying to leave on Friday, and this happened on Wednesday. So on Thursday, I try to get it plugged. I come back to pick the tire up, and they say, inside of the rim, so inside of the part that the tire hugs, is chrome buildup. Your tires are made of chrome. The chrome is a natural thing, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, what does that mean? They said if you put air in it, it won't make a seal. So the air will keep coming out. They said a week later, you'll have a flat tire. I said, okay, so what do I do? He said, take it to Goodyear. They'll scrub the inside of the tire. Now, in Philly, we don't have access to, like, there's one Goodyear. So I wait till the next day. I take it to Goodyear. They say they clean the tire, and they say they put it back on my car. I drive off. I get my suitcase. I'm going down the highway. Cool 70 miles per hour. I like to move and shake. And my car's like, do you think they put the tire back on my car? Or did they leave the spare on my car, y'all? They left the spare on my car. So I'm driving 70 miles per hour with a spare tire on my car. Now, fortunately, I was being very hip and young this day, so I was wearing some overalls, and I just changed it myself and, like, took pictures next to my car wearing overalls, changing my tires. And I got to the event late, but I made it there. So when it happened again that my tires are just kind of, like, not reliable, I was, like, upset, but I wasn't surprised. But I still feel icky. You know, it's the same thing as the milk. Like, I left this to be this way. Like, my husband actually was like, you know, I'm just going to take your car and get new tires. And I can't say that I wasn't hoping he would say something like that earlier. But I also at Goodyear said to them, like, should I get all of the rims cleaned? But it was like $20 each, so four tires. I'm like, oh, it's $80. I'm just going to wait. Yes, at the same time, because that's what created this issue. I essentially was waiting for somebody to tell me what I felt. I felt that I should probably get them all done at the same time. And I'm looking at this expert like, please co-sign. Please tell me that what I feel is really what's happening. And he's just like, so since he brushed it off, I brushed it off. But in this case, even though I wasn't the expert, I was actually right. So, I mean, in the grander scheme of things, when we talk about microaggressions, when we talk about things that we see oppression, I think when you see something, say something. That's the first thing. But then, you know when to hold them and know when to fold them. So I'm going to give you a tip. Remember I said I'm going to give you a tip for wading through this on the holidays? You're going to love this. So I use this all the time. When you hear something that's a little questionable, or in your head, now you've got good cards in your hand, and you know when you hear something that's not right, just throw the ball back to them in their court. So, like, let's say you're at church and you're in a meeting or something, and your friend is like, oh, man, I'm glad I moved my purse before all those young kids came in here from the basketball team. This is what you do. What do you mean? And just stare at them, okay? And they say, well, you know, at the those basketball boys are getting community service here, and they're all in the sanctuary. You know, I'm just glad I moved my purse to keep it safe. Why would your purse not be safe in the sanctuary? It's a sanctuary. What do you mean? And then they say, oh, well, you know, it's just because, you know, young guys. And you just be like, no. What if it was a white hockey team? You mean young black guys? Like, you have to just throw it back, because they'll back themselves into a corner, and you didn't do it, okay? So use this at dinner. What dinner would you have next coming up? Easter, okay? Y'all use this at Easter, the next holiday you celebrate, or if you celebrate any holidays between that. If you hear someone say, even a prejudice that you might think is also correct, another trick you can do is if you hear someone say something that's grouping people, you can say, you know that's a function of patriarchy, right? And they'd be like, okay. Or you know that's a function of white supremacy, right? And then just keep going with the conversation like nothing ever happened. Okay, you might lose some friends. So like, just, I'll be friends with you to fill in until you make new friends if you lose friends based on my advice. Disclaimer, you're gonna make some people uncomfortable, okay? But you have the power to push or pull. You have that power. Because if you let those chances, remember this? This was so fun, by the way. Anne, thank you so much for making it. Anne's not even in here. Anne made this. You have the power, because if you don't take the chance when you see it, they become less and less. So either your group of people could become very monochromatic or very singular-minded. Even the opposite, where you're preaching to the choir because all of you think the same way. You want to be around people that have difference, but you also want to take the opportunity that when you see a chance to correct someone, or you see a chance to push, or you see a chance to pull and have a conversation, open it up, because you don't want the chances to lessen until you don't see them anymore. And so you don't have to always be brave all the time, but just be brave during the right times. Blessed be, may it be so. Amen.